Arizona's news station. KTAR News on 92.3 FM. Bruce St. James and Pamela Hughes.
The lawsuits are flying fast and furious. This time, Joe Arpaio suing the New York Times.
I have my reputation to salvage after 55 years of dedicated service. So I'm filing that lawsuit, and somebody has to take on the New York Times. I'm willing to do it.
Okay, so he's willing to be the one to take on the New York Times. He's suing for libel.
Somebody has to take them on.
And
for telling the truth about me, which I prefer you didn't know about.
All right. Oh, goodness. There's so much to dive into. So I'm thankful that we have KTAR legal expert Monica Lindstrom joining us right now on the KTAR Newsmaker line. Good morning to you, Monica.
Good morning.
You just can't get away from us here now, can you?
I love it.
Well, I'd love for you to break this down for me. So the ex-sheriff is suing the New York Times for libel. And break that down. What is that? And so people can understand what it exactly is, you know, why he's so
upset. The definition of libel.
You.
Maybe we start with that.
Okay, so usually the words defamation, libel, and slander all go together. You hear them together. Mm-hmm. Slander starts with an S, and that's for the spoken word. So that's how I always remember.
Oh, okay.
Libel is when something is in print. So for him to sue and to win, he has to prove that there was a false statement. It was published.
I think we lost her.
We lost her there.
Yeah.
Okay. Well,
I prefer cell phones, by the way.
we're talking about this op-ed piece. So Arpaio is upset about the op-ed piece that was published the day after he lost the primary, the Republican primary for the Senate seat, and he is upset because he says that they printed falsehoods about him. So,
okay.
I'd like to take a moment, Bruce, to read a portion of this op-ed piece. And I'm trying to get at the heart of what it is exactly Arpaio's taking exception with.
What does he believe was libelous?
And I don't know, because we've asked that question. Our KTAR news team has actually asked him that question.
He doesn't
and
have an answer.
He says, I'd rather not get into the details of that. Why don't you ask my attorney? We're working on getting that attorney to answer those questions.
Start with the title of the piece.
Well, at least Sheriff Joe isn't going to Congress.
So this was immediately after he lost the Republican primary back in August.
Let us pause for a moment to mark the loss of a fierce and tireless public servant, Joe Arpaio, the former sheriff of Maricopa County, Arizona, who so robustly devoted himself to terrorizing immigrants that he was eventually convicted of contempt of court and would have lived out his twilight years with a well-deserved criminal record if President Trump, a staunch admirer of Mr. Arpaio's bare-knuckled approach to law enforcement, had not granted him a pardon. Now, is it a bit terse?
I think you're being facetious.
But I mean, like, it is.
You know, there's a little bit of they're making fun of him for losing.
Yeah, but I'm looking at that going, what's not true about that? You might not like
there
the
were
word
times,
terrorizing immigrants, but if you go to the immigrant community, those were the words that were being used when I would go out to Guadalupe during the SB 1070 times or when there were roundups. And
count me as one who's not shocked that Arpaio and his attorney wouldn't understand the concept of an opinion, an op-ed, an opinion piece, that this is the writer's opinion that they were terrorizing immigrants.
Let's go on here.
Backed up by the way, some evidence and court documents.
His 24-year reign of terror was medieval in its brutality. In addition to conducting racial profiling on a mass scale and terrorizing immigrant neighborhoods with gratuitous raids and traffic stops and detentions, he oversaw a jail where mistreatment of inmates was the stuff of legend. Abuses ranged from humiliating to lethal. He brought back chain gangs, forced prisoners to wear pink underwear. He set up outdoor tent city, which he once referred to as concentration camp, to hold the overflow of prisoners. Again, like, I look at this, okay, medieval in its brutality. Okay.
Opinion.
Yeah. Conducting racial profiling on a mass scale.
Fact.
Terrorizing immigrant communities.
Opinion, but based in fact.
Let's see what else we got here. A mistreatment of inmates.
Court cases documented. Fact. Settlements, by the way, Maricopa County had to pay out through the nose.
Chain gangs.
Fact.
Pink underwear.
Fact.
Tent City.
Fact.
Now, I mean, it's a two-page. Let me look at this. No, actually, when we print it out, it's a two-and-a-half-page op-ed. And I'll be honest with you, I haven't gone through every line word for word. But Joe Arpaio is suing the New York Times for $147.5 million. Mm. And it's a strange number. Like, how do you come up with that? And so Jeremy Foster in our KTAR news department asked that question, and here is what Arpaio had to say.
I don't know. That's the lawyer. That may be what they're worth, the paper is worth. So I don't know where he came up with it, but I'm sure he had a reason to. I'm not overly concerned about the money. The money's not the issue with me.
Money's not the issue. Yeah. By the way, feel free to donate to his legal fund. Money isn't the issue. Monica Lindstrom is back with us right now. Monica, does the ex-sheriff have a case? How do you prove in a court of law, or at least to the point you get a settlement, that a crime was committed?
Well, Arpaio is going to have a very difficult time here because the article is protected by truth and by opinion and general reporting. So unless he can show that there's something in that article that is false and the New York Times and the writer of the piece deliberately put something false out there with actual malice, because he's a public figure, he has to prove that they did it on purpose with the sole intent or the main intent of just destroying him or hurting his reputation, then he might win. But again, it's going to be very difficult because as you read pieces of it, yeah, it might be negative. It might be terse, like you said, Pamela, but is it false? And isn't somebody allowed to write an opinion about him? And not only that, how does he quantify the damages? We heard him talking about money there, and he has no idea. That's up to his lawyer.
Yeah,
but how can you prove that she hurt his reputation and he didn't do it on his own?
KTAR legal expert, yeah, Monica Lindstrom joining us right now. We're talking about how ex-Sheriff Joe Arpaio has filed libel suit against the New York Times for an op-ed piece published the day after he lost the GOP primary for Senate. And Monica, as our news team here at KTAR spoke to Arpaio, he says he's trying to protect his reputation. And he says that this piece may have, in fact, hurt his future political career, and it may damage his standing with other Republican donors if he were to choose to run for office again in the future. Would all of that be taken into consideration in this case, or is it just the op-ed piece in the New York Times?
Well, it's hard to prove something that could happen in the future, right? It's very speculative. And that's another difficult piece of the lawsuit is how do you prove something that may or may not happen in the future? And not only that, let's say you do prove that this could hurt his chances, which it could hurt his chances, but how do you put that into dollar signs? How do you put that in numbers? Because you can't put the toothpaste back in the tube. They can't depublish the article, right? And
sure,
make sure that no one has ever seen it. Your digital footprint stays there forever. So I'm not really sure what his goal is in this other than to have the New York Times apologize or to show his followers and his supporters that he's a fighter and he's just going to fight to the bitter end.
Yeah.
Thank you very much. That's KTR legal analyst Monica Lindstrom. So how does that same convicted criminal, Arpaio, say that these words in the New York Times hurt his future chances with Republicans when just this week he was on stage with Dennis Hoff, the owner, the brothel owner of the Bunny Ranch in Nevada, who's running for office in Nevada, and shared a stage with a porn actor, Ron Jeremy, who was endorsing Dennis Hoff as well, and the famous Madam Heidi Fleiss. Does that damage his reputation, being in the company of and supporting and showing up at a fundraiser event with people like that?
You know what this screams
to
me? Oh,
Flava Flav was there as well.
Flava Flav!
with the clock.
Oh, you got to have the clock.
If you didn't bring the clock, you wouldn't
then recognize it. Then you're not Flava.
I mean, come on. Just some guy.
Yeah, you got to have the clock.
He's got the clock. Oh, it's Flava Flav.
But it's one of those things, Bruce. What this is screaming to me is attacking the media once again.
Yeah, a standards thing, you know, the fake lying, yeah, all that, the standard bull.
At the very
BS.
End, I mean, one more time, I want to play this another clip for our audience, because listen to the very end of what Arpaio had to say when KTIR got with him about why he filed the suit.
I have my reputation to salvage after 55 years of dedicated service, so I'm filing that lawsuit, and somebody has to take on the New York Times. I'm willing to do it.
Somebody has to take on the New York Times, and I'm willing to do it.
For telling the truth about him.
It just seems odd to me. Again, it is this perception that, you know, the media is
going to
out
fundraise
to get
off of this. He's going to fundraise off of this. This is about money. This is about staying relevant. And when you finish third out of three in the Republican primary, you have to try to blame it on something.
But how do you fundraise? He's not running for anything. What do you mean fundraise?
Oh, people will donate money for his legal. We want to bet. I'll tell you what, I go look up joearpaio.com and find out if you could donate to his legal. Come on.
I'll do that.
Come on. Yeah. This is it. I could make the argument that he has done a pretty good job of damaging his name without any help from the New York Times, and that his political career and or future, at least in the state of Arizona, has been dictated by his actions to the point that in the Republican Party, he couldn't win, first off, re-election as sheriff, and then couldn't win the Republican nomination for Senate. How is that the New York Times' fault?
Mm-hmm.
You see what I'm saying?
Well, you've
been losing elections on your own. Wrote this after you lost your last election.
You say about being relevant. We're talking about it.
Yeah. I think it's about money. I think it's just all about money. You're not about money. It's all about the money. A Texas high school. Well, excuse me. All Texas high schools now require almost common sense training. You could make an argument. That's right. Kids in Texas are required to watch instructional videos and go through some classroom instruction on how to deal with the police.
Bruce St. James and Pamela Hughes.
You could make an argument that it is teaching common sense, or maybe the common sense that isn't being taught in high schools. In the state of Texas, they now require as a condition of getting your diploma that you go through call it instructional videos on how to interact properly with law enforcement.
Yeah, during a traffic stop.
Mm-hmm.
You get pulled over while behind the wheel. How should you behave?
Pastor, put your hands on the dash. Pastor.
Ma'am, put your hands on the dashboard, please. Thank you.
Okay, that's part of the video. It's poorly acted, but the point that they're trying to get across...
It is decidedly poorly acted.
Oh, my goodness. The point they're trying to get across, though, I think is a good one.
Okay.
And I run it through the filter of nobody ever taught me how to act when a police officer pulled me over.
It's not a thing.
I get nervous. I honestly, still to this day, I get nervous. My hands
shake. Most people do.
It's part of me. So we asked you on our open mic line, what do you think about this? I think it's good. I think it's something that, yes, I probably should have learned from my parents, but they didn't think to teach it to me. They did the best they could with what they had, and they didn't think about it. And I eventually
maybe
learned.
Wasn't a big enough concern.
Right, exactly. I think that, you know, I've learned a lot just being in the news business and covering stories on what to do and what not to do. But we wanted to get your thoughts. You liked it too, didn't you, Bruce? You like this video idea?
I like the concept of it, yeah.
Okay. But does everybody?
Okay.
602-200-2733. Here's what you're saying across the valley on our open mic line.
You know, I applaud Texas for taking the initiative, because I had a friend in high school that during a nighttime stop, she was gunned down by Phoenix police.
Wow.
Because her and her boyfriend were moving around trying to get the registration and insurance out of the car.
Yeah.
And he couldn't tell what was going on. All he saw was movement, and he killed them both. So I applaud Texas for taking the initiative and trying to pay attention.
Listen, some of the onus is on police officers to not shoot unarmed, innocent people. Don't get me wrong. I'm not trying to absolve them of that. And I'll be as critical as critics can be when it comes to police behaving badly. But I think Texas acknowledges, as the person being pulled over, that you have a responsibility as well. And there's things you can do to mitigate the chance of a bad outcome.
Yeah, and I talk about putting my hands on the steering wheel. You know, your hands where you can see them kind of situation.
10 and 2!
Right. And if it's nighttime, you know, I've turned on my dome light so they can see what's going on in my car. When the officer asks for the license and registration, I say, okay, I'm going to reach into my purse or the glove compartment or something along those lines. Communicating because, well, I just, through all the news that I've covered, feel like that's the right thing to do. What do you think across the valley?
William, in Avondale, this is ridiculous.
Okay.
We should be afraid of the cops. We have to roll down our windows and turn on our dome light because they're pulling us over. That's ridiculous. We should not have to fear the police.
I don't disagree with that as a concept. Here's the problem. If you're being pulled over by the police, there's a suspicion that you may have committed some crime, speeding, ran through a red light. We're talking about traffic stops. So it's not that you have to fear them, but they are pulling you over, and if it's they're legally allowed to do that, what can you do to try? Why wouldn't you want to prevent a bad thing? I tell you, roll down your tinted windows. If you have a gun in the vehicle, first thing you tell the officer is, "Officer, I have a weapon in the car." Don't let them see it under your seat. Don't let them pick it out in the corner of an eye and you didn't say something. That makes cops nervous. At least that's what my cop friends tell me. Communicate to them. Be clear. Be deliberate. We hear the stories all the time. Police officers going up to cars and people just having a shooting it out with them. They have to assume the worst. That doesn't mean you're a bad person. It just means they have to assume that. There's things you can do to make it easier. How's that? Another wave of migrants heading our way. Thousands of them. Trump says he has a plan, but will it work? We're talking about it. Coming up next.
Arizona's news station, KTAR News on 92.3 FM. Get some perspective. Bruce St. James and Pamela Hughes.
Our southern border continues to be a mess. The immigration, asylum system, whatever you want to call it, is not working, certainly not the way it was intended. And we have news that it potentially may be about to get a lot worse.
Yeah, where have we heard this before? A caravan of migrants coming from Central America with their goal, the U.S. border. We know that there was somewhat of about 1,300 people that set off from northern Honduras over the weekend in something that's being dubbed as the March of the Migrant.
Okay.
They then faced rows of Guatemalan police in black uniforms as they tried to enter that country. Police officers wearing helmets and shields. They blocked the migrants from getting to custom booths, but eventually the standoff broke and the group was able to cross.
Sounds like there's a hell of a lot more of them than there are customs officials.
Well, you know what? There were a lot more of them while they are making their way through Guatemala. We're being told now that it's upwards of about 3,000. Now, there's no way to really confirm those numbers, so...
Fair enough.
It could be anywhere from 1,500 to 3,000.
Well, it's a lot.
That's a lot.
It's any way you call it. It's a lot of people walking, jumping on trains, jumping in vehicles, whatever, making their way. Either it's unclear as well. Some of them are trying to make their way into Mexico. Imagine this. Mexico is a better option for a lot of people in Central America. That Mexico is good enough for them. Some, though, are trying to make it to the United States border or southern border and make a claim, either enter the country illegally and disappear or make a claim of asylum at the border.
Mexico has said that the march participants would need to follow their immigration rules to enter the country, but did not specify what that criteria may be.
Yeah.
Now, last week, we had on several members of the KTAR news department who had been following the story of the Guatemalan migrants who had been released by ICE and were overflowing churches here in the valley. And our news director, Martha Maurer, sat down with ICE. And that's where we found out that down in Guatemala, I'm using the term advertised. That might not be the right word, but it gets the point across where in Guatemala, they are reporting about how you can come to the United States. They're going to release you at the border and then you can stay.
The word is out. It's being spread. However, come to the United States.
And my question to Martha when we were interviewing her was, how long before other Central American countries start doing the same? And she's like, well, that's the concern of ICE. Now it appears that we are starting to see some of this spread. It's a problem, and it's a problem that the president is none too happy about.
Right now, a caravan of more than 1,000 people from Central America is heading toward the United States and heading straight for a showdown with the president of the United States. President Trump tweeting this: "We have today informed the countries of Honduras, Guatemala, and El Salvador that if they allow their citizens or others to journey through their borders and up to the United States with the intention of entering our country illegally, all payments made to them will stop."
I don't know how that's remotely enforceable by any stretch of the imagination, and how that threat makes the situation any better.
You know, I think that it can make sense.
How do you stop someone from leaving your country?
Well, I don't know if it's necessarily stopping someone from leaving your country. What I heard him say is, as folks from Honduras are trying to make their way through Guatemala,
through the other countries,
should stop it. And as they're trying to make their way through Mexico, they should stop it. Like, there are several different border checks that need to happen before this caravan ends up on our border.
Fair enough. I think one of the issues is that we assume that Central America runs like we do. I think we can acknowledge that the reason that hundreds, if not thousands, of people are trying to leave El Salvador, Honduras, Guatemala, is because these places are horrific. The government doesn't work, if you will. There's a general breakdown in a lot of society. And the idea that they've put their limited government resources into the Honduran Border Patrol, I think, is laughable in and of itself. Because what is the... Think about this. I'll agree with Trump on this. If you're Guatemala, if you're Honduras, if you're El Salvador, do you want to stop these people from leaving? If you're strained as it is now, if you are bordering on a third world country, if you can't take care of the population you have, and you have people that say, we're going to leave and go somewhere else, you're like, yeah, no problem. When are you guys headed out?
But why is it our responsibility in the United States to take care of them? That's where my disconnect is. See, listen, when it comes to, like, entitlement programs, Bruce, I think that they should be a safety net for some people who need them to get back on your feet. I'm not opposed to entitlement programs. I am opposed to the abuse of mm-hmm. entitlement programs.
Okay.
When it comes to the border, I am not opposed with those who are trying to seek asylum because they are escaping death in their own home country.
Gang violence,
absolutely,
et cetera, whatever it might be.
And trying to make their way to the United mm-hmm. States. I'm not opposed to that. Mm-hmm. But when you're trying to use our system and tweak it for your own benefit without following the rules as the intent of them, that's a problem. And I don't see how that becomes our issue to fix the problems that are going on in Central America.
I'm gonna make the argument against it. And listen, I don't necessarily disagree with anything you said. Unlike Guatemala, unlike Mexico, unlike Iran, unlike Japan, the United States has held itself up as a bastion of freedom, as something of a nation that takes them in. Bring me your tired, your poor, your huddled masses. We stand uniquely around the world as a country that does look to take people in need in. The argument, I guess, in what you're saying is, where's that need? At what level is the need become something that we need to be concerned about?
I think the finer point is, if you need it, I'm all for it. If you're going to abuse it, I have a problem with
it. But that is subjective.
I get it. Oh, no, I get that.
Parents of children starving in Guatemala because they can't work and can't find jobs say, our option is starve to death or come to the United States.
But when you have a migrant out of Honduras saying, we're going to drop in on Donald Trump and he has to take us,
they're not helping their kids.
They're not.
By any stretch. But we also have a system of laws. And these people, if they make it to our southern border, will be able to make a claim for asylum and become part of this system that is stretched to its capacity right now. Agreed. I agree. It's not, who is happy with the system the way it is now? I haven't met one person. Might be one of the reasons why you think we're going to hang in a handbasket. Guess what? Pamela says she's going to restore your faith in humanity, and that's coming up next.
Get some perspective. Bruce St. James and Pamela Hughes. KTAR News on 92.3 FM.
I've said it before. This season of The Apprentice is amazing, and you know what? It's must-see TV. You never know what's going to happen. Not even on any given day, Pamela. It changes by the hour. The story, the narratives, the characters that pop up. Well, we have a character from the recent past, one Michael Cohen.
I remember him.
Trump's personal fixer, the guy who went around and paid off porn stars and prostitutes and made them sign NDAs, as he testified in a court of law. The one who's cooperating, pled guilty and is cooperating with investigators. He's not going away quietly. Pamela, Michael Cohen has a new calling in life.
Michael Cohen is now doubling down with the Dems.
The president's former fixer, Michael Cohen, once the ultimate Trump loyalist, now wants to campaign against Trump and the entire Republican Party. A Democratic source telling CNN that Cohen is prepared to stump for Democratic candidates and call out anything he considers to be lies from President Trump.
Okay, so he wants to campaign with Democrats?
Michael Cohen, okay, he may want to or think he's, I'm dead serious. What Democrat would want to stand on stage with Michael Cohen? How is Michael Cohen admitted he pled guilty? He's a cooperating witness.
You say what Democrat would want Michael Cohen to campaign with him? Well, you may want him to, but folks, since he is he's not allowed to travel. Right? He's got limited amount of states of which he can travel to.
As per his, his conviction. Okay. Per his plea.
He's not allowed to go too many places. So you have to be,
you have to go to him
in certain jurisdictions.
Manhattan, apparently.
Yeah, who would want this? Who would want this? This is a sideshow. This is an episode of The Apprentice. And if you're a Democrat, why would you welcome this? Like, what do you think the benefit of it would be?
Yeah, no matter how much you hate Trump, standing on stage with Michael Cohen, I don't see how that helps you with voters.
This is strange. He may want to. This might be his last veiled attempt to really stick it, not only to the president, but as you heard there as well, the Republican party. He may want to do that, but who wants him to be there?
Listen, it's obvious that, and I think from some of his statements and or his cooperation and testimony, that he is butthurt, that he feels betrayed by Trump, and this is the disgruntled ex-employee trying to get back at the boss.
It is the disgruntled ex-employee.
Right?
Yeah, that's a good way of putting it.
I just don't see how that benefits anyone. I would be shocked if anyone signs up to have Michael Cohen come.
I literally don't
know who's crazy enough. I'm sure they exist. But who would say, you know what, that Michael Cohen's going to help push me over the top in this election?
That would be fascinating.
Michael Cohen volunteering to go campaign, raise money for, and show up at campaign events. For Democrats, because Trump was mean to him and called him a bad lawyer. Might be one of the reasons why you think we're going to heck in a handbasket. Don't worry. Pamela says she can restore your faith in humanity.
Yes. After enduring a family loss, this woman found healing through ice cream. Stick with me here. For most of the year, Stacy, she's a teacher, and she actually teaches for homeless children. In the summertime, though, in Duluth, Minnesota, she hops on her tricycle cart, and she becomes her sweet alter ego, Mrs. Delicious. Now, Mrs. Delicious specializes in giving away ice cream that was paid for by someone else. She started the whole dispensing of ice cream as a means of bringing joy to people after the death of her 91-year-old great aunt a few years ago. And then she was approached by a man who bought some of her ice cream cones and then immediately told her to give them away to other people. And so for the past three summers, that's exactly what she has done, providing popsicles and ice cream cone bought by the community members who want to pay it forward for their neighbors, many of whom want to pay it forward in honor of someone else. And she said, you know what, right now, people just want to know that there's goodness and it's prevailing over evil, and they want to be part of that. So they're doing this whole pay it forward ice cream. I love it.
You had me at ice cream. Let's get that out of the way right there.
Mrs. Delicious, her alter ego.
Mrs. Delicious. It's
fantastic.
Thank you, Pamela. Restoring faith in humanity. That's what we do to end the show on the high every single day. Pamela and I look through the Double Pane Bulletproof Glass. There's DJ Tommy Two-Tone. We've got super producer Stevie Z and Bob McClake.